Well, this morning Michel gave a very nice introduction to conics and points on conics, so I won't have to do it in too much detail. My aim is to show you different algorithms to find points explicitly and try to see which one generalizes to any number field. And at the end, if I have time, I will show you a generalization to higher dimension. So, but I will start with the beginning. My beginning will be the conclusion, in fact. The picture showing you how I classify the algorithm. So here is my picture. You know that a quadratic equation can be seen either as a norm equation or as any quadratic equation with three variables. So this is here you have a norm equation, and here you just have any quadratic equation. Okay, if you think as it as a norm equation, you know that the norm equation is multiplicative. So the main tool will be to use the multiplicativity here. And here, as any quadratic equation, you will use reduction like LLL or something like this, lattices. Okay, there is a lot of places in between because I will write names for people having studied, having given algorithms, and some of them will be in this part, and the other one will be they will use the multiplicativity extensively, and the other almost never. So the first algorithm is an algorithm given by Legendre, and he gave the first name. I will show you his algorithm later. This algorithm has been improved, for example, by Cremona. In fact, there are many names here. I just cite him. Okay, you can improve it, this algorithm, descending a little in this direction. I will show you how. Okay. Now there is another algorithm due to Cochrane and Mitchell. Well, they use the norm form okay, the idea is to use the quadratic form, the quadratic equation, and the lattice reduction. So, but it's not the end of the problem of the idea. There is another algorithm due to several people, including Ivanio Santo and myself. And which almost use only lattices and reduction, and forget completely that it is it can be seen as a norm equation. There is a last algorithm that completely forgets this aspect of the problem. And okay, I should write it directly here using, I don't have a name for this, using arithmetic of a number field, especially in this context, I have to build the class group of quadratic extension and things like this. Okay, I should mention maybe here the name of Ficker here, who did some work in this situation. But okay, the context of norm equation for quadratic extension is so extensively studied that I should mention many people, and Ficker probably did work for other degrees than the degree two. But okay, it's a name. I have a name for you. So, okay, all these algorithms are designed for equation over Q. So over Q. If you want an algorithm that is easy to describe, you will use this one. So. Okay, this is one. This one is easy to describe, and usually when you go down, it's becomes more difficult to describe. Well, to my point of view, the worst algorithm to describe is this one. It's very complicated to describe completely, but it is very efficient, so it's a good algorithm. So this is. From the point of view of description. Now, if you want to consider the speed of the algorithm, then it should be the contrary. Okay? So the speed. Okay, this one is typically very, very slow. Because you have to build class groups and units and things like this.
Should be a frown.
Okay. I'm not happy with it. And at the bottom, they are very, very fast. And we can prove that they are polynomial time, for example. So it's very, very fast.
In what?
Hmm?
Polynomial time in what?
In the entry. Okay, the entry is a quadratic equation, so you have a. You can put the coefficient into a matrix, a symmetric matrix, of size 3 by 3. So the size of its coefficients.
But it would mean that you can factor discriminant polynomial time.
Okay.
I mean.
For any of these algorithms, you have to factor the determinant of this symmetric matrix. Forget this problem. Forget this problem because it's the same for everybody. So. If you forget this, then this algorithm is still very, very long, and this algorithm becomes a polynomial time. Mm-hmm.
And the output of the algorithm is a point on the curve or something?
Okay, it's a solution of the norm equation, or a point, a solution, a zero of the quadratic form, or a point on the conic. Depends what you prefer. Okay, I don't know which algorithm gives the smallest solution, so I can't compare them. So now I have a third point to compare them. Is it possible to use it to generalize to number field? Okay, this algorithm is very easy to generalize to number field. And this algorithm using the reduction is essentially impossible, because for a number field you don't have reduction theory. You don't, especially if your field is not Euclidean or things like this. So you see, the quality of your algorithm depends on your point of view. So now I will describe the first algorithm. This one, which consists in solving a norm equation. So, now, you know that. Okay, if you have your quadratic equation in x, y, z, equals 0, you turn it into this form. x squared minus a y squared equals b times z squared. So in this form, you see that you have to solve norm of, okay, if my ground field is k, the extension obtained by the square root of a, this extension, you want to find someone of norm b. This is the equivalent, so now you forget completely this point of view and you just concentrate on this situation. Okay, the idea is to see B as a unit, or at least a S unit. Okay, so S is a finite set of places, including at least the prime dividing B. Okay, S is a set of places of the ground field K, or maybe of the field K square root of A. I don't worry me about this problem. So identify them. So B is a S unit. You know in advance that it will be a norm because you have the Hazard principle or anything you want to tell you that this equation has a solution, okay? You know that it has a solution. B is an S unit, so the question is it true that B must be the norm of an S unit? This is the question. Okay. For the same set S, this is the question. If the answer is yes, then okay, just build a system of generators of the S units in the field K square root of A, and then by linear algebra you just have to you find a solution. So this is my question. Okay, the answer is not is no in general, but it's usually yes. Under a condition which is not too difficult, okay? No. But yes, if the class group of the field is trivial.
Upstairs.
Okay, upstairs. Okay, and in fact,
the
because
class group or the S class group?
For the moment, the class group. It's stronger, certainly. I will make some restrictions. Okay, in fact, because the extension is of degree 2, just the two parts of the class group is enough. It's very easy. The other point, as Michel told, you can restrict to S here,
yeah.
The S class group here. So this remark gives you the algorithm. You start with a set S which contains only the prime dividing B, and add to this set a set of generators of this class group. Okay. So now this class group, the S class group becomes trivial. Certainly, in definition. So now you know that the answer is yes. So you know that B will be the norm of S units. So it gives you an algorithm, very simple algorithm. Compute the class group of your extension, compute S, and the S units corresponding. System of fundamental S units, and then by linear algebra you find a solution. Okay, it works. It's very easy to describe it for number fields. It's perfect, except that it's a long algorithm because you have to compute class group and the units, so it's difficult. But it's easy to describe, as you can see. Okay, we are here at the top of the description. You see, in fact, there is a problem. We don't know an algorithm that computes only a part of the class group without computing the full class group. Except in one situation, which is exactly the situation here. Okay, I have to tell you. It's possible to compute the two parts of the class group of a quadratic extension by genus theory. This is the only situation that I know where we can compute a part of the class group without computing the full class group. But, okay, can we use genus theory to compute the two parts of the class group? The answer is yes, it's completely possible. But the main step for this is to solve norm equations. So if you want to solve norm equations, it's not a good idea. In fact, you can't use this idea to solve norm equations. But if you forget for the initial problem here, you can solve this problem if you can solve norm equation by another mean, okay? So we will see at the end that it would be very very efficient to compute this group if we can solve norm equation by another method, typically with such methods. Okay, so here now. So, we really have to compute the full class group if you want to solve this equation here. So there is no other possibility. And okay, this is why the algorithm is so slow. Okay, now I will describe the algorithm of Legendre, which is very old and very, very inefficient. Okay. The idea of Legendre is to write the equation as in the previous case in this form. Okay. And okay, it works as follows. Assume for the moment that we are in Z, that A and B are okay square free. And not coprime, it's not possible to reduce to this case, non-zero, and that A is smaller than B. This is, okay, if it is not the case, I just have to exchange them. So, now, okay, look at this equation modulo B, so this disappears. And we have to find the square root of A modulo B. Okay. For this, I have to factor B. I can't do it without factoring B. So, factor B. Okay, call it x0. Now you can choose x0 between b over 2, minus b over 2 and plus b over 2. Okay, if x0 is small. Okay, you plug in this into this form and you see that okay, x not square minus a. It is divisible by b, by definition, so it's a b times b prime. And because of this inequality, you have that b prime is is smaller than something, then b over 4 plus 1, okay, which is usually smaller than b. Except maybe if b is very, very, very small. So it's always smaller than b. And you see that we have solved a part of the equation because we have found an element of norm b times something smaller than b. And because the norm equation is multiplicative, we are reduced to solve a smaller equation, which is x squared minus a. Y squared equals b prime in square. This is using the multiplicativity. And since this is smaller, the algorithm is easy to understand now. Do this thing as long as your equation can be reduced. And there is only one case when it cannot be reduced. It is when the equation is trivial. So in this case, you have a trivial solution. So you come back and you find your solution. So this is the algorithm of Legendre. The main drawback of this algorithm is that it takes a very, very, very long time, because at each time, okay, you diminish the size of b, but not so much, just by a factor of 1 over 4. So and at each step, you have to be able to factor b. You see? Okay, if you start with this equation, you are ready to factor the initial b, but not b at the second step, because this b prime here has nothing to do with the initial problem. You don't want to factor it. So it's not a good idea to apply this algorithm as it. Okay, so we want to reduce the number of factorizations in this algorithm. An idea to do it is to allow this y here, or here you see the y is 1, to allow the y here to be something else. In fact, you want to have something like this. You want to, you keep your x0 here, and here, in fact, we have something like that. No? Yeah. Not for the moment, yeah? Okay, you want your x to be congruent to x0. Modulo b, multiplication. Okay, this is my condition. So you have the condition mod b. So in fact, you want to find an x and a y. Such that this quantity will be small. So we can write it like this. Okay, plus b times something. Okay, and the equation now is x square minus a y square. This thing, which is divisible by b, should be small. So if you want this to be small, for example, you can bound this, introducing a plus here. Okay, and here you have a quadratic form that you can reduce. And you see that if you reduce this quadratic form, you find something that is small in terms of a and b. And at the end, you find that your x squared minus a y squared equals b prime with b prime which is much smaller than previously. Okay, a constant times the square root of a. So this is much smaller than previously. You only had something smaller than, okay, say b over 4, and now you have something smaller than square root of a. So for example, this is smaller than a in general. So at the next step, you this is smaller than square root of a and square root of b. So here you just win one digit at each step. Here you divide the number of digits by 2 at each step. So it's much faster. So the number of factorization has decreased very much here. This is an idea, and you see we use an idea from reduction of lattices here. Okay, but anyway, we still have to factor the next b prime or the next a prime. So there are still some factorization. So here is an idea of John Cremona, who knows how to, he explains how to use the previous solution, okay, the x0 and the y, the corresponding y, at one step, to deduce a square root of the a at the next step. And okay, it's very difficult to describe it, but the corresponding algorithm is very, very efficient because there is no factorization except the initial one. So, over Q is very efficient. What about number fields? Is it possible to generalize this to number field? Okay. The Legendre algorithm, probably not, because if the number field is not Euclidean, here the constant 1 over 4 has to be replaced by another constant, which is usually bigger than 1. So you can't reduce anything. So forget this one. What about this? This is still possible. The difference will be in the inequality here. But you see here, your inequality here is so large that you have space, and even over number field, okay, this inequality must be maybe worst, but it is so large that you have space to, and in number field you will still decrease something, and in practice it does decrease something. So this algorithm really reduces over number fields. I can't prove it, and I'm sure you can give me counter examples, but it works very often. Except the last step, because okay, you reduce, and at the end you have something very small. The only size you have on your coefficient is norm here. Maybe you have another idea. So you will get a new equation where the plus or minus 1 here has to be replaced by a unit in the ground field K, and the plus or minus 1 also has to be replaced by a unit. So now the question is, given such an equation here with units epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, can you solve it? The reduction can't do anything because it already reduced. Can you solve it? I have no idea. Oh, yes, I have an idea. Try the norm form of the previous algorithm I gave. So, okay, this is the end of this algorithm. In practice, the combination of these two algorithms is very efficient. If you try first to reduce it using these ideas, it reduces a lot. Many times it finds a solution, and if it doesn't, then you can try to solve it using class groups and things like this. And the combination of this is very, very efficient. This is what I suggest you if you really want to solve quadratic equations over number field.
So up to what degree of number field do you think this is practical?
Okay, the only limit is your limit to compute class groups. So if here you have a quadratic extension, so if you can compute a class group in degree, say, 20, you can solve quadratic equations in degree 10. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to compute the class group unconditionally.
No, certainly not.
Just if you get a solution, then you can forget the computation.
Okay, maybe there is another idea you can try before trying the method of class groups. You can try here to multiply your elements by a random element. You are looking for an element of norm, a unit, a given unit. You can multiply this unit by a random norm of something and try to reduce again. And if you are lucky, the unit here will disappear. Okay, you can try it. It works in some cases.
I mean, only find many cases for each field.
Yes, for each field you can store them, but in general I can't do it. Sure. If your field is fixed, you can solve them once for all, and then you're done. Oh, you have to be careful, because here I say that you finish with units. Maybe the constants for the given field will show you that here you have some things, typically 2 units or 3 units. So maybe your list is a bit larger. But okay. It works. Now I will describe the third algorithm, where there is almost no norm left. Okay, I will.
You can use the second board that's behind. So if you move the front one down, then you can use the other one.
But you can't see this one anymore.
Better than
except
nothing.
You.
So
the third algorithm.
So another question is, do you have this implemented? I mean, so that one can just.
Yes, my algorithm for finding points on elliptic curves use these IDs. It reduces first using this, and then at the end, if it does not find a solution, then it tries the method of computing class groups and units. This is how it is implemented in my program. This is in GP. So now, I had the third algorithm, the algorithm of Cochrane and Mitchell, which is almost what Mitchell told, minimization and reduction. Not exactly, but essentially. So now you have the equation in this form. Okay. This is a little more general than the previous one, where the coefficients are integral and co-prime this time in square free. Okay, this is not difficult to reduce to this case if you can factorize ABC. So now, if you look at this equation modulo A and B and C, you look in fact mod ABC, and you have conditions. Typically, you have to find the square root of minus B over A modulo C, and equivalently mod B and A. And you find that your solution, a solution must satisfy a congruence condition, a sublattice, okay, call it L, of the three, and its covolume is ABC, or maybe two times ABC,
two ABC.
I can't remember.
Two ABC, you can get two ABC. If you want to use this kind of approach to prove the Hassard principle, then to see Minkowski's lattice point stuff, then I think you need two ABC.
Okay, it's
but
just an idea of the algorithm. If you really want to implement it, you have to look carefully at their paper. And then, okay, you know that your solution must be here, and then you reduce your the quadratic form where you have replaced the condition by the absolute value, so it becomes a positive definite quadratic form. Okay, reduce it. For example, using LLL. They prove in the paper that if you reduce it, then a short vector for this quadratic form will give you a solution.
Basically, constructive proof of the Hassard principle.
So here you have an example of an algorithm that uses only the factorization of the initial coefficients and nothing else. And since the reduction with LLL is polynomial time, the algorithm is polynomial time in the original coefficients.
Mm. Well, of course, if your original equation is not diagonal.
Okay, this is why I will explain the next algorithm. But before, I have to tell you that for what happens for a number thing. You see there are two steps. You build a sublattice here. This is essentially what Michel called the minimization. Okay, for a number field, it works essentially as it. You have to be careful if you want to reduce modulo prime ideals that are not principal, but there are ways to do it, and this is not where is the problem. The problem is here. This is impossible for a general number field.
I don't know how to do it.
So, this is really not a good idea to try to generalize it to a number field. But over Q, it's very, very, very efficient. Okay, now, even if you are over Q, you may have an equation at the beginning that is not diagonal. So, the price to pay if you want to reduce to this case is to factor the number here, ABC, that are maybe not linked to the determinant of your initial equation. So you have to factor something that you don't know in advance, so it's not a good idea. In fact, it would be better to have an algorithm to solve it directly on a non-diagonal form. So this is the last algorithm.
That's another board behind this one.
Okay. Okay, now I will be very fast on the last algorithm. If you start with any quadratic equation like this, typically non-diagonal, or I have to write this way, I think.
Native speakers?
Okay. Now, everything we did here can be done directly on a non-diagonal form. okay, it's a more general, but what you have to do is, okay, factor the determinant, and for each prime of dividing the determinant, you write local conditions like this, and in fact you reduce you can reduce to the case where you can remove prime by prime anything in the determinant, and reduce to the case where the determinant of 2 is 1. For this you have to compute square roots mod p typically, or linear algebra mod p. Okay, it's explicit. And in the case where this is diagonal, it is exactly this algorithm. It's not different, it is exactly this one. So now we reduce to something of determinant exactly 1. This is the determinant 1 here is not clear, but in fact if you write your quadratic form here restricted to this lattice here, in fact you really have something of determinant 1. This is exactly the same idea. So except that here it's on the non-diagonal form. Okay, reduce to this case, and now using LLM, okay, you reduce it, and since the determinant is very, very, very small, the bound in LLL gives you that the shortest vector will be very, very small. And okay, a short vector is a solution. Okay, except one thing that this is, if you try to use LLM directly, it won't be, it will not be agreed, because LLM does work only for positive definite quadratic forms, and here typically it's not positive definite, otherwise there is no solutions. So you can try an idea like this to reduce another quadratic form. Okay, this idea works, but I find it's not very elegant, because if we start with a quadratic form, it's convenient to use this quadratic form until the end. So there is a version of LLM which works for indefinite quadratic form. Okay, so and a short vector will be a solution. So it gives a solution. Again, if you want to try this to generalize this to number field, it won't work for the same reason as the previous one. But over Q, if you start with a non-diagonal quadratic equation, this algorithm is very, very efficient. And typically, for example, if you want to do 2 descent for elliptic curves, this is the way they occur. You really have a quadratic equation of determinant, you know, in advance, because it will be typically the norm of a S unit. So you know in advance the prime dividing the determinant, and usually they are very small. And the coefficient of the quadratic equation are very, very, very large, because they are coefficients of units. So they are really large. And if you want to reduce to this case, the coefficient you have to factor the ABC here will be the coefficient of your initial equation. So they are very, very large, even if your determinant is 1 here. Okay, if you have already done 2 descents, you understand what I mean. And this is important to be able to do this without reducing to the diagonal case. So I have some time left to try to generalize to quadratic equations of higher dimension. So now we have over Q good algorithms for dimension 3. Now I want to generalize to dimension 4. This is the first step after 3. Okay, it will work only for for Pew, but maybe some of you will have ideas to generalize to number fields. In theory, it's not difficult, but in practice, there are maybe a lot of problems. So, I can. Now you have an equation, Q. Okay. And you want to solve this equals 0. You have a new variable now. Before doing this, I have to do something. So, section 4.5. This is general theory. I have to explain you how I compute this this class group, the two part of the class group of quadratic extension. So this work over Q. Okay, you know that for a given discriminant D, the elements of order 2 in this class group are easy to describe. Typically, they are given like this. They are given by quadratic forms of this type, where minus AB equals D. This is not always the case, but almost always. This is given by ambiguous forms. Anyway, they are explicit. And so you see that in order to be able to describe all of them, you have to factor D. So the same problem as before. So you know this part of the class group. But okay, it's not the full two part of the class group. You have to do something. And since you have these elements, now if you want to have the full two class group, you need to be able to make a descent. I don't know the... Okay, you have to take square roots of these elements. I say square roots in this group, maybe if you are in the linear world, you will say divide by 2. Okay. 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 Now take a form like this. And what does that mean to take the square root in this of this form? Okay. First, you have local conditions to know whether this is possible. This is given by a Hilbert symbol, so it's very easy to decide. And in fact, the Hilbert symbol, if you look carefully, are exactly the same as the one you have to look when you want to solve this equation equal 1, or equal 1 times square. So the Hilbert symbol are exactly the same, and the problem are related, in fact. So for the moment, forget this problem, and concentrate on this one. I can solve this equation because I have given the algorithms. So solve it. Okay, this is efficient. Now, if you have one solution, you can parameterize all the solutions. So you have x of st, y of st, and z of st. And if you are careful, this parameterization is such that, concentrate on the parameterization for z. This is a quadratic form in S and T of discriminant exactly D. Of determinant exactly D, exactly the correct one. Okay. If you are not careful, we'll have an index here, d times typically, a square, so d times the square. But if you are careful, you can remove the index here, and you have exactly the correct determinant here. And it's a fact that this quadratic form is exactly the square root of this quadratic form.
One square.
Up to sine?
Well, you can have, I mean, if the true torsion is large, then you can have many square roots.
Okay, there are many square roots. Yes,
but
there are many
you
square roots.
You can guess them by.
Okay,
sort of
it's a square root, it's not the square root, it's a square root. That is, if you compute in this class group, this quadratic form square is this quadratic form. Of course, there are many square roots, and there are as many square roots as. Different parameterization you can get here, and as soon as you have a particular solution here, you have a parameterization. So where do you have a choice here? Where do you come the different parameterizations? Just when you compute square roots mod mod D, you have always two choices. Here, you have to compute square roots typically of A mod B, and for this, you have to choose a square root mod P dividing B and P2 dividing B, and for each P, you have two choices. And for each choices, you get a different particular solution and a different parameterization. So it will give all the possible quadratic solutions, the square roots. So, but now I am able to compute square roots in the class groups because I am able to solve conics. And the algorithm for computing the two parts of the class group is clear now. You have generators of element of order 2. Using Hilbert symbols, you decide which of them are squares. If they are squares, compute their square roots. And again and again, you can build the full two class groups. This is exactly the generous theory. Generous theory says that if you can solve norm equations, then you know the two parts of the class group. So this algorithm has been described already by Gauss, and has been implemented by. People like Shanks and Bosmas, Steven again. Okay, so it is very efficient and quite. Now I will come back to my problem of dimension 4. Okay, you have your equation here. I prefer writing this in the. With a symmetric matrix of size 4 by 4. Okay. You know that the Hasse principle is true. So you know that your equation has a solution. Okay. So doing an inner chain of variables, you can assume that the first coefficient is a zero. Now doing an easy transformation, you can have something of this form. Okay. In fact, you have here an hyperplane, if you prefer. Since the determinant here is 1, you have zeros here. And here you have something left. I call it Q2. And everything here is over Z. Of course, you don't have the solution here, so you don't have this decomposition explicitly. So you don't have Q2 explicitly. But you know that it exists. Okay? And you can compute its local invariance. Of Q2. This is easy because you can compute the local invariance of Q, and you have the local invariance of the hyperplane here, so you deduce the local invariance of this one here. And now I don't know Q2, but I can build a Q2 prime with the same local invariance as a Q2. And consider a quadratic form of dimension 6. Okay, I write it in this form.
What are the local invariants?
Local invariants.
What is that?
What is it?
Yeah.
They are defined. You diagonalize your Q here, and you compute the product of the Hilbert symbols of the pairwise coefficients on the diagonal. If Q equals A, B, C, D, the C P of Q is the product of, it's A, B times A, C times A, D, times BC, etc. You compute the product of all the possible Hilbert symbols. And this is the local invariance for Q. And you do it for every prime P defining the determinant. You can do it for any prime P, and the only interesting ones are those for that divide the determinant, and maybe also two. So it's also a local invariance at infinity. Okay. It's completely explicit. It is given by the signature of the quadratic form. So it's very easy to compute. And so now we have built a quadratic form of dimension 6. And using this, it is true that this Q6 can be minimized using still the terminology of Michel Stoll. That is, you can find a chain of variables such that now the determinant of Q6 is 1, minus 1. Now it's important because dimension is even, so I can't remove the sign. So the determinant is exactly minus 1, and still using the reduction theory, and Q6. Is equal, I say equal, should be, there is a basis where, in this form, is a product of three hyperbolic planes. Or if you prefer, you can diagonalize Q6 by blocks, where all the blocks are of this type. Maybe with a 1 here, but it doesn't matter. In particular, you can find a subspace of dimension 3, which is totally isotropic for this quadratic form. And this space of dimension 3 certainly intersects the subspace of dimension 4 corresponding to the original space. The intersection is of dimension at least 1, and it gives a solution of this equation. So this trick is due to Cassels. This trick to go to dimension 6, and I have implemented this trick, and the corresponding algorithm is very, very efficient. Okay, it's a polynomial time algorithm to solve quadratic equations in dimension 4. there is a possibility to generalize this to dimension 5 and 6 and 7 and n if you want, but only over Q. If you are over a number field, okay, the theory will work except when you want to reduce something, and at each step you try to, okay, to reduce here, for example, or you try to use LLL. Typically, when you want to solve this conic here, at these steps, you have troubles for number fields. But the theory for minimization will work probably everywhere. That's the end of my talk.
Thank you very much. Questions?
No questions?
Yeah, I have a question. I didn't get what the last equation means. Q6 is the sum of three H's.
Well, this means that after reduction, Q6 has this form. Maybe one here. I call this an H number plane, and you have three copies of it, which are orthogonal. And orthogonal, so you have zero.
Over the integer. Huh? Over the integer.
The reduction is over the integer, but okay, if it were over the rational, it would not work very neatly.
More questions? Okay, then, thanks again. And so maybe we should have a break.